Blog Talk Radio.
You have room on your team for this little space, bitch.
Everybody to Fantasy Football Tonight. I'm your host, Todd Chuguferino, and of course, I will be joined shortly by Mr. RC Rizza. Tonight, we're going to talk about, of course, all the debacles that occurred in Week 2, the good stuff, the bad stuff, and maybe quite the ugly stuff. And of course, then we will move on to what's going to go forward with Week 3 and some prime pickups that you've probably already gotten because most leagues already do their pickups at this time already, but that's where the ball bounces, so we want to make sure that we'll get you set up for your next week as best as possible. A lot of the chatter I'm hearing across the Twitterverse and the rest of social media is, and of course even, you know, classically old snail mail known as email, which is no longer used anymore that often, but often enough to where it pees me. And a lot of the chatter has been about, oh my gosh, you know, the Eagles, the Cowboys, and the Indianapolis Colts, and also what the heck to do with the New England Patriots. But the primary one that I'm going to get into today will be, of course, the good and mighty, awesome, fantastic Indianapolis Colts. I'll wait a little bit for RC to get in. On the quick DFS front, I'm going to give DFS 1.5 minutes of my time. Played a wonderful league again. The scam continues. I love it how, you know, they put you in a league. I got myself in a couple dollar leagues, and one of them was $50,000. I love it. $50,000 and $1 join in league, and you join in, and you know, 57,500 people. I mean, I see it, and I boggle my mind. It's like it's tough enough to beat one person a week, or even 12 people a week in a league. But man, I got to beat 57,500 people. Of course, you know, they collect their 15% at 7,500, take that home, and then disperse $50,000, which, of course, I got $50. I finished in the about 1,700. So it's like I go, wow, man, I beat 55,800 people, or whatever that number would be, maybe 56,000, 55,800 people. I get my $50, and, you know, 50-1 on my money. So that's great. I mean, if it would have been $50 and then I would have won $500, that or $5,000 or whatever it might have been, that would have been fantastic. $500, whatever. That would have been awesome, but I didn't do that, so too bad for me. So I'm just testing this out right now and having some fun with it, because if you go too crazy, folks, with DFS, you're going to really hurt yourself financially, because in the end, you know, it's kind of not fair. It's really not when you have to beat up on that many people. But the result is, hey, I'm winning, so I'm having a little bit of fun with it, but I'm never going in further into the bank. So the first topic at hand for the show, got to make sure he's in. Are you in?
Hey, what's going on?
RC. Hey, how you doing? I just did a tiny little spill on DFS. I'm moving on now. It's not worth the time of day. I've gotten some flack for it, you know, across the channels, where I'm just going to say where they really talk up DFS. But, you know, like I said, when they're propping up DFS like it's the kingpin stuff, only because that's who their only sponsors, their only real sponsors are, then that's what they're going to do, RC. And they're going to continue to tell people to do it for those reasons. Anyhow, I want to get to the first topic. We have a jam-packed show because I know your injury report is probably going to take 3 shows to go through, correct? About 3 shows?
Yeah, there's a lot of pretty significant injuries, yep.
Yeah, and then we have some other developments in the sport. But the first one we want to take on, RC, I want to do some buy low, sell high talk, okay? Buy low, sell high. We're in the week 2. Now, are you familiar with fantasy football?
Am I still what?
Are you familiar with fantasy football?
Yeah, vaguely.
Vaguely. Okay.
Yeah.
You mean you have an idea. You know what we're talking about. Okay. So RC's on the same page as me. You know that week one is that crazy week. So all sorts of wacky stuff happens. You know, defenses have the whole preseason, blah, 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 to prepare. So do offenses. Great, grand, awesome, beautiful. Week two now is where things kind of settle down, but you still have veterans who are not quite in the game form yet because they really didn't play that much in the week, you know, in the preseason. So now they got one game under their belt. Teams are still evaluating players. So the first couple of weeks are really kind of tragic for fantasy footballers because you never know which way to go. And then, of course, everyone panics. So here are the panic buttons being pressed, RC. I'm going to bring up two names. We're going to start with the first one, and you know who this one is. It's Andrew Luck. Everybody's panicking with their starting quarterback. I mean, he was the number one draft pick in most leagues, if not number two draft pick. I highly doubt in any leagues, except for maybe the Riders league I'm in, would he have actually gotten out of the second round. So here's my take on the Colts, and I want you to give me your take on it and the future for Andrew Luck. First of all, he's a buy low. You got to go and you got to snatch up this guy. I know he's had a couple of bad games, and I really don't even understand what the Colts are doing, RC. I mean, they go out and they let Reggie Wayne go, 14-year-old veteran, for what, like a 12-, 13-year-old veteran. Then they sign Andre Johnson, a 12- or 13-year-old veteran, to take his place. Not sure what the great move there was. They then go and draft Philip Dorsett, who they don't automatically, with the number one draft pick, and they don't, like, slide him into a starting role. They just don't. They just kind of say, you're here. That's bad coaching right there. Furthermore, their tight end game has completely vanished. In fact, I don't think any – I watched them – I didn't actually physically watch the first game of the season, but I watched, obviously, the Monday night game, and I didn't see one pass go to Kleiner or Dwayne Allen, who, of course, left with an injury probably like midway through that game. So I'm wondering a couple things about the coaching here, and are these problems going to get resolved, RC? Number one, are they going to officially at some point say – listen, Andre, you know, maybe you're best suited, to be a guy who comes in for certain plays. Maybe we should put Phil Dorsett on the outside, put Moncrief in the middle, or vice versa. I mean, Dorsett seems to be a good wide receiver, second wide receiver. And go with the three wide receivers of Hilton, Moncrief, and Dorsett, and get some threatening guys on the field as opposed to Andre Johnson, who really couldn't get much separation at all versus any of the Jets' cornerbacks. I know that made you very happy. And furthermore, they also, you know, and the final step on this offense is the whole Frank Gore debacle. I mean, Frank Gore is not a bad running back, but he is 34. He's up. Is he 34, Arthie? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So they have Boone Heron. They still have Dan Boone Heron, and then they have the young rookie Robinson who they were trying. I don't know why Heron was absentee from that game. Maybe you can explain it to me, RC. I mean, I wasn't aware he was injured at all, so I haven't even looked at that. He's obviously been off my radar. But why they switched around from a successful formula they had last year with so much speed on the field, you know, utilizing their tight ends. I mean, Dwayne Allen was an impact fantasy tight end last year, and Kleiner had some fleeing moments, if you want to say. He's still not very impactful, but he had some moments. And then they had Heron with a solid running game after they got rid of Richardson. So here's my question to you, RC. Do the Colts have to make major changes for Andrew Luck to become successful? And do you agree with me that he's a buy low? Because if you look at his upcoming schedule, I mean, he still is in the AFC Central, where he has plenty of damage to be done. And his next three games are divisional games against Tennessee, Jacksonville, and Houston, which one of those are at home and two of those are going to be on the road. And those are all games where he can do damage in the air. Talk to me about Andrew Luck and that Colts, mighty Colts offense.
Yeah, no, that's the issue right there. I mean, he just drew the unfortunate circumstance of facing, you know, I think even going into this year, defenses are very unpredictable, but it was fairly apparent that Buffalo now under Rex Ryan and the Jets under Todd Bowles, and not only that, but they really repaired their secondary. They brought in Gilchrist. They obviously did a wholesale change at cornerback and brought in two of the top, arguably the premier cornerback with Darrell Revis, and then on the opposite side of him, Cromartie, who is very, very solid. So basically with Andrew Luck, you're absolutely right. This is buy low. It's only going to get better from here. Like you say, Tennessee coming up, Jacksonville coming up. Houston is a tough defense, and it is in Houston, but I think he should do fine there. Then after that, New England, New Orleans, that's nothing to worry about. So over the next 5 weeks, you're going to forget the nightmare that you've gone through for the first 2 weeks. You know, as far as their free agent acquisitions, Andre Johnson was a mistake. They basically made the same mistake that they made last year, keeping Reggie Wayne on the field for so long. You know, I have no idea why they went out and signed him. I think it was very apparent to anyone who's watching closely enough that you know, Andre Johnson was close to the done last year. So why do you bring him in to play on the outside? Frank Gore, that one's a little bit surprising because he's always been a really gritty player. I doubt that he's, like, completely fallen off the shelf completely at this point. I think there's still some value there. By the way, Dan Heron was waived in an injury settlement, so he's gone. The only guy behind him is Josh Robinson. And that really goes to help Andrew Luck because their running game is potentially non-existent. Because after Frank Gore, there's a nondescript, you know, backup player. And if Frank Gore is not getting it done, then Andrew Luck has to throw more than he has to. Dante Moncrief, you know that I think he's for real. I think he's going to, you know, I think it may have happened already, displace Andre Johnson. He's the big physical receiver that Andre Johnson used to be and apparently can't be anymore. Philip Dorsett is a stretch-the-field, smaller stature receiver, different type of guy. He's really like a T.Y. Hilton kind of guy. So, and then with the tight ends, Dwayne Allen got hurt, so that's why you didn't see much of him. Colby Fleener is wildly erratic, and he would have absolutely no value if he wasn't on the Colts. Almost any other team, and he basically would probably never get any targets. But now, you know, this week, though, if you need to fill in, he makes sense because Dwayne Allen might be out. You know, so don't panic. And like you're saying, if you can wheel and deal and somehow pry Andrew Luck from the owner right now, who's grossly disappointed with him, you should absolutely. But, you know,
if I can have it between you and me, because in every league it's me or you who owns them, so it's not going to happen for us.
But, you know, and this goes back to the conversation we were having in the preseason where, and that's why, and this doesn't just apply to Andrew Luck. This applies to any quarterback that you take in the first round. You got to be really careful. I took Andrew Luck, not in the first round, but if he fell into the second, I was willing to take a shot with him. But, you know, it's extremely risky. And, you know, I liked your philosophy. You were absolutely right about the running backs in the first round. Running backs in the first round have pretty much almost been a complete disaster this year. Because, you know, I think Adrian Peterson, you know, definitely showed up this week. But to tell you the, you know, honest truth about it, I was watching him run. He's not the Adrian Peterson of 4 years ago. So I doubt you're going to really see too much of that kind of performance. I think he'll be solid, but I don't think he's going to be like the completely dominant player. C.J. Anderson was one of those guys that, you know, you could just sense it. That was just a landmine waiting to happen, you know, and that's really coming to fruition. But, you know, when you look at that Denver backfield, though, it's not like Hillman did very well last week either. So there's other things going on there. But, yeah, getting back to Luck in the first round and any quarterback in the first round, you just have to really be careful with that. And like you were saying in the preseason, your safest bet was taking one of those, you know, premier wide receivers. Like if you ended up with Odell Beckham, Julio Jones, you know, even Dez Bryant, of course, he's hurt now, but even that made more sense than taking Andrew Luck or maybe any one of those running backs that were going in the first round.
And we've discussed that in years past about just how, you know, how you can look back at the first round the year prior and see all the busts. And it's not that there aren't busts in every round. It's not that there's not busts in every position. It's just that there's a high propensity I don't know if that's the right word, RC. Get it out your Webster and let me know. Four busts running backs in the first round. But let's talk about a second round running back that right now I think is a buy low candidate. Because we're gonna get back to, I mean, you know, listen, we're gonna get to DeMarco Murray in a second, okay? Because and the entire Eagle offense. Because I think people are certainly need to hit the panic button on that whole situation, and that's been the talk of the town. But I want to talk about one more buy low guy that I think that you're a fan favorite of, and that's Melvin Gordon. Okay, this is a guy who's gone out his first two games as an NFL player, not of the season, and he's had somewhat mediocre performances. He did a lot better week two. The great thing about his situation is number one, he's been absolutely fantastic in the open field, and he's got, you know, and I actually got to watch him in his last game, and, you know, it is the fact that he gets so many, you know, great, like, you know, 5 to 8 yard runs, it's just showing that he's finding those holes, and he's going to eventually, you know, utilize that breakaway speed, whether it be on some kind of screen pass or whatnot. But I think that the big problem for Melvin Gordon has been so far is that the Chargers have found themselves, I guess, you know, in game one, they were down, like, you blinked an eye and they were down 21-0 again, or 21-3 or something like that, against the Detroit Lions, which they then had to come back on the arm of Phillip Rivers, which kind of eliminated Melvin Gordon from the situation. And then, of course, last week they played Cincinnati, and, you know, that game was a 14-6 game at halftime, and then they had to find themselves coming back in that one. So, RC, here's my two-pronged question about Melvin Gordon. Do you agree, number one, that he's a good buy-low candidate because that his role is going to increase and increase, and, of course, his production will until he's a full-fledged, outstanding number one running back for not only for his own team but for fantasy purposes. But number two, what is the difference? I'm kind of confused on – because Melvin Gordon to me seems like a younger version, maybe not quite as stout, you know, as strong as Danny Woodhead. But he seems to be a younger, better version of Danny Woodhead, yet they don't choose to use him in third down or even goal line situations. The goal line I understand. But why do you think the Chargers are going that route? Is that going to be a season-long thing? So those are two questions.
Yeah, but Melvin Gordon, as I think I've told you, if there's like one player that I drafted in over 50% of the leagues I'm in, and I'm in a good deal of leagues like you, it was Melvin Gordon. And the reason was really the value that you were able to pick him up at, which was really after the first couple rounds when all the obvious running backs went, the guys that were left that had the most upside, in my opinion, you know, the one guy in particular was Melvin Gordon. And at this point, you bring up a great point about the usage of Danny Woodhead. I think some of that is really just a function of Gordon learning the game. I think it's come a little bit slower to him. And it's also the luxury that the Chargers have to have a veteran behind him to basically fill that gap for now. But certainly I think as we progress through the year, Gordon is going to take this job and run away with it. And that also I think is going to extend to the end zone work as well. you are right that, you know, Gordon is not known as like an overpowering back. I mean, he's pretty tall. He's like 6'1", but he's only about, you know, he's about 210. So, but that is a giant compared to Danny Woodhead. Danny Woodhead has no business in the red zone. Danny Woodhead in the red zone is really kind of like a surprise element because no one expects Danny Woodhead to be, you know, used in the red zone. You know, defenses don't really prepare for that player because it doesn't make any sense. And I think as we go further in the season, you know, right now it is pretty much overwhelming the usage. The Woodhead has gotten 7 red zone touches to Gordon's only 1. But, you know, once again, as we progress in the future weeks of the season, I think that's going to even out. And then finally, Gordon, I think we'll have the edge there. So I'm not at all concerned that I have him on 10 of my 18 teams. I think he's going to be just fine. You know, certainly, you know, he hasn't done anything yet. He's been, you know, just pretty much average. Him and really T.J. Yeldon kind of fall into the same boat, in my opinion. But T.J. Yeldon over in Jacksonville, the one advantage he has is that there's really no one behind him except Denard Robinson. He's the next guy that's been used, but it's still Yeldon 85% of carries and Robinson the scraps. But both those guys I think are going to be fine. I still like Gordon better. And if your point is that, you know, is this a guy that you want to trade for? Yeah, I say absolutely.
Yeah, no, if you could steal him from somebody who's panicking. I mean, this is the time where, you know, the Sharks need to come out. You need to be a Shark. And you need to see, you know, especially, and if you're 0-2, don't cry too much. Trust me, there's plenty of bad NFL teams that are 0-2. And or if you're 1-1, you know, I mean, I'm 1-1 in most of my league. I went 7-1 the first week, and then I think 3-4 the second week. So in most of my leagues, I'm 1-1, and I'm in the same position a lot of guys are in, where yet a lot of players fail. I mean, obviously, when you have Drew Brees and Andrew Luck as your primary quarterbacks in most leagues, you know, in fact, one of the leagues I won in, the Halifax League, RC, Derek Carr was my quarterback. He, by the way, was a one-week-old, one-week-miss sleeper. I mean, I had him, you know, sleeper for week one, but week two, he obviously teed off. But, you know, you have to just not hit the panic button quite yet. Now, you don't want to go to 0-3, and you don't want to make a bunch of roster moves. I don't really think right now, RC, is a good time to make too many roster moves. Certainly there's some guys worth picking up. I know a lot of people were hot and heavy for Matt Jones and James Starks and a guy we're going to talk about shortly here, Crockett Gilmore, because that's a guy I like. And of course, there was a few other guys out there that were very hot on the waiver wire. We'll get to all those in a minute. But you right now, besides maybe making a few changes here and there, RC, you probably agree with me, which, you know, unless someone's stupid enough to trade you a guy, you know, and give away something magical like a Melvin Gordon or an Andrew Luck, you really should probably stay pretty much pat with your roster and see how things filter out week three.
Yeah, well, you know, that you have to evaluate that on a case by case basis. I mean, there are, I'm sure, some situations where, you know, you might have drafted, you know, like say, you know, Charles Johnson too early, you know, players like that, DeMarco Murray too early, you know, like if you've got combinations like that, then you might be in trouble, unless you have faith that they're going to turn things around. You know, but if you're basically have drafted players that you do have faith in, you're pretty sure of the reason, and you're kind of seeing glimpses of, you know, of that being, you know, justified, then, yeah, of course, you should stay pat. Yeah, definitely not the time to panic. You know, if you're 0-2, that's no big deal. I mean, the last time the Giants won the Super Bowl, would they go, like, 0-4 before they basically went down the stretch, just dominated everybody? So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it was like 9-7, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, not time to push the panic button yet. But I'm sure you're going to bring up some players where, you know, the concerns that we've seen in the first 2 weeks might very well linger, and not for any reasons that have to do with them individually, but for maybe the team situations.
Yeah, well, let's talk about, because I do want to talk, well, before we get to the some of these free agents that people overlooked, and then, of course, the injuries. We got to bring up the Eagles because, you know, I'm an avid I'm a member of the We Hate Everything About the Eagles Club. You know, I'm actually the founding member of it and the president and the CEO. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to get into that. But, I mean, I watched this team, and I told everybody last year. I said this late last year. I said it early this year, too. I said, the Eagles suck. They're actually a horrible team. The only reason why they were able to find any success last year, number one, they had some talented players. They did. I mean, you know, when you have LeSean McCoy, Jeremy Maclin, and company, you're gonna put up some points, no doubt about that. But their coach is just a horrible coach. I don't think he has any clue what he's doing. I think his ego is really more the decision maker of any part of that team that he is, or any of his other coaches, and frankly, I don't even think he really all that much listens to any of his other coaches. So my problem, I'm going to stand by what I said. And since I've been saying that, listen, guys, really in effect, the Eagles just really are a crappy team. And ever since then, they barely won a game. I can't remember the last game they won, because I know they went on a terrible losing streak at the end of last season. I don't have their last season record in front of me. And now they've opened up this season 0-2. And they went out, and, of course, he went out in RC, and he got rid of, you know, Pro Bowler Jeremy Maclin, you know, stud running back and Pro Bowler LeSean McCoy, you know, got rid of, you know, Trent Coles on defense and trade away players. And, I mean, and in the end, he put together his own team, because last year his excuse was, well, these aren't my guys. Well, got rid of Nick Foles, too. These aren't my guys. Well, now he got all of his guys that he wanted, including DeMarco Murray, which I thought was a horrible, horrible fit for this team. And everybody said, yeah, DeMarco Murray is a good running back. He's not as good as you think he is, because he was running behind that Dallas line. And the Dallas Cowboys, who I believe most people except for me, think that they have a, you know, below-average defense, held him to 12 yards and actually held him to negative 9 yards for about three-quarters of the game. It wasn't until the very end of the game, which in uncommon fashion, this is how desperate, actually, I got to say this, and then you can go off on your Nelson Aguilar, he's going to be an all-pro spiel, okay? You can do that. Get ready for that. At the end of the game, with 2 minutes left, they're down 22-3, and they're running the ball from the 10-yard line to give DeMarco Murray yards. It wasn't about winning. They weren't trying to win at this point, RC. They were trying to give him yards, to get him out of negative territory, and to get him into positive territory, and to get him a touchdown. That's how desperate this team was. So I'm sitting here looking at it, and I'm sitting here saying to myself, this is a team in turmoil, RC. It's a team that has really a coach that cannot function any longer as a coach, a coach that said that he's going to reevaluate everything after only 2 weeks of football, including his quarterback, and he's going to and he thinks somehow he's going to miraculously come up with a game plan that's going to beat pretty much the most brutal defense in the league next week. And I believe they're – are they in New York for that game, RC?
For the Jets versus – let's see where that is.
Scott, I think it's in New York.
Yeah, it is in New York, yep.
Yeah, so he's going to go to New York now, and they're going to be 0-3 after this game. I'm going to guarantee it that there is no chance in the great land where all of the bad people preside that Sam Bradford or DeMarco Murray is going to mount any offense. I mean, he's actually hurt, so we don't even know if he's going to play. Or Ryan Matthews is actually going to be able to mount an attack against the Jets. So, RC, here's the question I'll pose to you, and you can go ahead and bash the Eagles all you want because they deserve it. I mean, they're egotistical, you know, jacknuts who think they can say whatever they want to say, and then when they come to the field, they can't back it up. And, you know, obviously they're loud mouths. So tell me, do you think there's any fantasy value left on this team? I mean, I'm not saying I don't think there is any. I'm asking you, do you think there's any? And go ahead and bash.
Well, we talked about this in the preseason. I think it's – remember we were both kind of – you had brought this up numerous times about the Eagles, and we spent a good deal of time kind of just wondering what in the world, you know, Chip Kelly was doing. You know, and it was really obvious, really didn't make any sense in terms of, like, his stacking the running backs in the way that he did. You know, with DeMarco Murray didn't seem to be, like, a really good fit for what he likes to do in terms of spreading the field. DeMarco Murray very much excelled last year, you know, running straight up the gut. And that's not what he's doing this year. And as a consequence, he has like half a yard a carry, and that's not an exaggeration. That's what it actually is. And, you know, so he to sign him and Ryan Matthews, and you still have Darren Sproles right there, it's like you've got the dream team of running backs, and you're not using them in the correct way. And, you know, and some guys really need, you know, amount of plays to really get in a rhythm, and that's – obviously, right now, impossible to happen for the Eagles. And then, when, like you said, getting rid of Jeremy Maclin and replacing him with a rookie. And, you know, here's something interesting about Aguilar. And I'm glad I did not draft him in one league because I thought he was going way too high. And, you know, Eagles are not, and all the hype and all the nonsense. But, you know, I just noticed this, but you know that Aguilar comes from the same school, Southern Cal, that Marquise Lee comes from, and then before him, Robert Woods. Now, as far as I can see, Robert Woods, who I like coming out of school, has been grossly overvalued from his NFL draft position. Robert Woods, basically, on most Sundays, you wouldn't even know he's still in the league. And then Marquise Lee was also like a potential, you know, considered by scouts to be like a potential first-round player because of what he was able to do at Southern Cal. He has been non-existent in the full season last year and the early couple games this year. And that's the same program that Aguilar came from. And I'm kind of wondering if he's going to also end up with that same label of just being somebody who's grossly overvalued. I mean, looking at the receiver draft class from this year, there are easily 10 guys be really ranked ahead of him, including a couple guys that we haven't even seen yet, like Perriman, Jalen Strong, Kevin White, Darrell Green Beckham. You know, so but in fantasy circles, Aguilar was being considered way ahead of any of those guys, where the guys I just mentioned should end up having much more productive NFL. But Jordan Matthews, I think, is really, you know, that was the only player I liked from this team. Bradford, to me, and I'm sure, you know, you had the same opinion going into this year, it's like, why in the world did you think, first of all, he has never demonstrated mobility. He's really never demonstrated the star quality that you like to see in a quarterback at all. I mean, he is basically just a glorified, you know, game manager as far as I could see from his time in St. Louis, even though, you know, he was drafted very, very high. So why was it really necessary? And Nick Foles was nothing special, but Bradford is maybe equivalent to him, and that's an insult. So you were having good success, Mark Sanchez. Why was it necessary to stir things up?
Well, that's what Chip Kelly, listen, Chip Kelly was looking for reasons why. I mean, you could just look at his face. He looks like that little chubby kid who used to just get picked on, you know, back in school. And he just looks angry all the time. And I really do believe that when all hell broke loose last year after the great start they had with this newfound offensive strategy that's really been figured out now, I really do think that he just wants to wipe the slate clean and say, listen, I'm going to blame everything. Because if you really look at it, he completely overhauled the offense. An offense that started off real good, and then once the NFL teams kind of figured it out and caught up with it, all of a sudden it wasn't as good. And that's the thing I think that came down here, RC, is that really he was just figured out. And frankly, I think he's a fraud. I'm using that word loosely here, but I think that his new scheme is not only fraudulent to the Eagle fans, because once he knew it wasn't working anymore, he really should have just changed. He really should have gone to a more NFL approach. And instead, he blamed all the players and completely, I mean, he literally got rid of everybody except for the tight end on that team. I mean, and obviously some of the O-line. But, I mean, you know, he replaced everything. Got rid of Deshaun Jackson, Jerry Macklin. I mean, replaced them all. And now every single person on that offense is one of the guys he brought in. But I think Bradford's a joke. If you look at him, he looks scared. He doesn't want to take a hit. He'll just chuck the ball up when he has a defender in his face. I mean, he's horrible. And you're absolutely right. Go back to Mark Sanchez. You go back to Mark Sanchez, you might have some success. But still, the question is, was the debacle that came about because the NFL figured out Chip Kelly, or was the debacle because of the talent on the field? If it's because they figured out Chip Kelly, I don't think Mark Sanchez is going to have much more success in the same system.
Well, yeah, you're probably right. There is some of that going on where it's not as surprised as perhaps it was last year. But I think you also have to pin a lot of the blame on really switching to Bradford. Because once again, it wasn't like Bradford really demonstrated any kind of star quality where, you know, you can say, well, this is going to be the missing piece in my dynamic offense. That could not be considered the case. Where Mark Sanchez at least has some mobility and definitely demonstrated that he could run that offense last year. So why was it necessary to go crazy? I don't think we should spend a lot of time on this because I think it's definitively clear that Chip Kelly is an idiot. And I think we should coronate him as the idiot that he is, give him his fucking idiot crown, whatever you want to do, and just move on from it. Because it's just really, really clear to me.
No, it is. And I think that there's, what has been known to be of the Eagles is now gone. And I mean, one of the reasons why I brought it up is because, I mean, this is one of the things that you and I kind of harped on. And we hope that many people took our advice and stayed as far away from the Eagles as possible. I mean, I do have, I think in one league I have Nelson Aguilar, and that's because he fell to me. I mean, I got him like in the sixth round or something like that, so I took a chance on him. I know I have Ryan Matthews as a backup running back in another league. And outside of that, and I know I have Sam Bradford as a backup quarterback to Andrew Luck in one league. And that's it. I mean, I'm basically, that's the entirety of the Eagles franchise that I have on my teams, on all seven of my leagues that I'm in. So I'm done with talking about them. You're right. Let's move on. I want to move on now to some of these. I feel kind of bad. I feel kind of bad because, you know, when you're talking the preseason and you're talking about as many players as you could possibly talk about, you never get quite to all of them. And one of the players that we've never had a chance to even get to, even last year when he was a rookie, which is probably because he wasn't looked upon as that great of a player, was Crockett Gilmore. Now, the reason why I bring him up is not only because he finally has broken out onto the scene and said, hey, I'm here, but, I mean, he's a guy that I've gotten to see play a lot. I mean, he played in the Mountain West for Colorado State, and I got to see him against UNLV, which he did a lot of damage against them. And he's a filthy tight end. And I think last year, which I think he had like, I can't remember how many, I think he only had like 15 catches for like 100-something yards. I mean, he was basically playing backup in his rookie season. But this is a lean, mean, fighting machine type of guy. I mean, you're talking about a tight end who's 6'6", 270, has great speed for a tight end, and has incredible ability to not only block but to break tackles. I mean, he really has the whole gambit. Why it took him so long to gain the starting job is probably just because of the tight end. It just takes a little bit of time to learn the game. But now he's there. And he's actually become the second most targeted person, a player, on the Ravens for Joe Flacco. I think in the first game, I think he had 4 catches. Second game, he had 6 catches and 2 touchdowns. So now he's out there. Now people know about him. So if you didn't, I think one thing that's going to happen, RC, and I can't say this for sure, but I think when people were going out on their waiver wires, I know this for certain, in the leagues I was in, because I mean I got him beaten. I mean, I have Ladarius Green and Jenkins on most of my teams, Jordan Cameron. And all three of those tight ends are injured. This is a debacle of week 2. All three of those tight ends have injury problems or are out next week. And I sit here, and I needed a tight end. So I said, my God, I mean, I can't believe Crockett Gilmore's still available. And look how good he did. I mean, my God, he's out there. Wake up here, I'm here. And everybody else went for like guys like Matt Jones, who was on many benches. And everybody else went for these, Tharks, because Eddie Lacy might miss a game or two. And, those cats and Travis Benjamin, the all-star pro. I want you to rip on him a little bit, have a little bit of fun with him. We've seen him have big games, and then we've seen him completely disappear. And I said, you know what, I'm not going after those guys. If you need a tight end, which I'm sure a lot of people need a tight end after the debacles of this week, I went and got him, and I was mad. I managed to get him in every single league that I wanted him in. And actually, pretty much got him in every league to this point. And I think it ended up being a very good thing for my, obviously, for my roster. But going forward, RC, this guy, he reminds me of a slightly smaller, not quite as brutal, Jimmy Graham. So talk to me, what do you think about the emergence of Crockett Gilmore, in this in the world of fantasy sports, football?
Well, obviously a lot of his emergence, this has just been 1 week, but this has been mainly out of necessity, because when you look at, like, who Joe Flacco has to throw to, it is pretty much nobody. And the running game is giving him no help. So basically it's encouraging to see that Crockett Gilmore did emerge. But, Steve Smith Sr., illustrious career, love him to death, but, you know, obviously he's slowing down. He can't do it all himself. It was kind of amazing what he was able to do last year at his advanced age. But, you know, pretty much, you know, that spark is pretty much dying out. Kamir Aiken, you know, that's just a guy that would be, like, probably seventh string on almost any other team, and they thrust him into the number two role. Marlon Brown has never proved he can be consistent. Max Williams, the tight end they drafted this year, just couldn't learn the playbook and get it together. So Crockett Gilmore, unfortunately, last year was mostly a blocker. But as you know, you seem to have like an inside scoop on him as to his playing ability. The only thing, you know, I would say that I might disagree with you on is his speed. You know, I know coming out of Colorado State, is that where he came from?
Yes.
He was known as very athletic for his size, which, you know, as you mentioned, is 6'6". And that, of course, is like a huge asset at the tight end position. But he runs, you know, at least going to the draft when he was drafted, he was probably rated like the number seven guy in that draft class because he ran like a 4.8 at the combine. And I don't think he really gets much faster than that. But then again, I mean, consider that the fastest tight ends are usually about 4.6. So that's not that big a deal if you can run correct routes, be in the correct place, obviously have that kind of imposing size. So, yeah, I mean, I the most encouraging thing, I think, is that he beat out Max Williams, who I think was more highly regarded. So I think that definitely bodes well for him the rest of the season. And, yeah, and it was good to see Flacco, because Flacco looked like a disaster the first week. It was good to see him be resourceful and use what he has, which is almost nothing. And I really can't wait for Bashard Perriman to get in there, because I really think he's going to be a huge contributor for that offense.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and that's what we are waiting for, Perriman to get involved in this offense. And you're right. I mean, Flacco doesn't have a lot of options. He has Steve Smith, and then he has Gilmore, and then, you know, Aiken and guys like that around there who haven't had much of an impact. But once Perriman gets in there, I think that, you know, Flacco will have just, you know, almost like a solid, you know, team of guys to really work with there, with the two wideouts, and hopefully that is if the number one draft pick Perriman does work out. I mean, obviously all rookies coming in the NFL, especially him not getting all that much time in the preseason to play, and then, of course, you know, missing the first two. Is there even a chance he's coming back this week, or is he still pretty much out until later, like week four or five?
Perriman, it looks like he's getting back to practice. We're not going to see him this week. It's going to be probably sometime over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, so that, you know, that's just really bad. So for now, I mean, Gilmore, great pickup if you need a tight end, if you need to replace Cameron Jenkins, or if you lost, who's the other one that might, Ladarius Green, who had a second concussion. I guess that happened in practice, RC. Give me the update on Ladarius Green. What was going on there?
Yeah, this is serious because, you know, concussions are no joke. And that's why the league has that new protocol where they're being extremely careful with concussions. So one concussion, and then obviously you get a lot of scrutiny, and you're held from activities. If you get two in a short period of time, we might not see Ladarius Green for a month, and that's how serious it is. So if you've got – and I love Ladarius Green this year, and unfortunately I'm going to have to, you know, find an alternative. You know, I don't know who you were – because I think you were kind of drafted the same way, where I know you went after Gronk where it made sense. I didn't have a draft this year where it made sense for me to take him, even at the number three pick. Now it appears that would have made sense in retrospect. But for tight ends, for me, I loved seeing Green available like in the 14th round or where he was going. And then my next favorite guy was like Ebron after that. And he was even going later than that. And when you look at, you know, how that has turned out in the last, you know, the last 2 weeks, those two guys are you know, pretty damn good, except, you know, except for Gronk, and no one's going to really compare with him. He's just a monster. And then when you look at the guys that were going, like Jimmy Graham has been a disaster, obviously, right? So if you, and where was he going? Probably like third round. So if you spent a third round pick on Jimmy Graham instead of waiting for someone like Green or Ebron, or even Tyler Eifert, who's just been a monster the first 2 weeks, that's really the moral to that story too, and it's kind of similar to the quarterback theme, right? Where, you know, and there are exceptions, and Gronk is probably an exception, but these other guys that are, you know, going high at that position, in a position this year that really seemed pretty deep in terms of, like, it really seemed like you can find a hidden gem much later in your draft. It made no sense to even, and I love Greg Olsen, but I didn't even take him because I thought he was going way too high in comparison to the values that you can get after that. Seferian Jenkins has turned out to be pretty good, but once again, by the way, that's another injury update. He's going to be out about a month. But you know what I mean? So there were these tight end values that you can get so much later in your draft. I mean, is that how you went about it, or what'd you do?
Yeah, no. I said I was going to wait on tight end. I took Gronk in one league because he was there, and I had like a, you know, quick, I think like an eighth pick or something. And so midway through the second round, he was sitting there, and he's been fantastic for me. And I think that's in the Bum Phillips league where I have Gronkowski. Outside of that, I just waited. I said, I'm going to get a tight end late because there wasn't a lot of, you know, I mean, a lot of people speculated that tight ends was going to be like almost like a dead position after Gronkowski this year. I mean, with Julius Thomas, you know, switching teams and breaking his hand, and then, of course, you know, knowing what's going to happen with Jimmy Graham, and, you know, and then, you know, Jason Witten's older. But, you know, there was some light out there in the tight end arena. And that was, you know, the reemergence of, like, a Jason Witten and Tyler Eifert and guys like, you know, even, you know, you had some hope out of the Eagle tight end, you know, Ertz and company there. But in the end, you know, you have to look at the guys that were at the far end of the spectrum, like the Eric Ebrons, the Ladarius Greens. And I've seen, you know, we watched Ladarius Green last year. He absolutely dominated. And then the thing that, you know, that got my eye the most about him is that I was like, listen, he's a big guy. He's, you know, he's fast. He almost looks like Antonio Gates. And he's in an offense that has a game book that's been written around a tight end. I mean, when you've had one of the best tight ends in football for the past, like, what, 10 years, however long he's been on the Chargers, you know, you have a playbook that has him figured into it a lot. So if they're going to slide with Darius Green in there, you know he's going to get some action until he can prove otherwise. And he has. He's gotten action. He got a touchdown. He got a little banged up last game, and then he got this concussion. So I do agree with you. He's probably, if this is truly a concussion and everything turns out that way, we're not going to see him for a little while, and which is probably best for him, and that kind of stinks for his owners. And that's why I'm saying, you know, you guys got to go look at these younger guys like Ebron, who RC was very much all over. I mean, I loved him last year as well, but, I mean, he's a prototypical, you know, tight end, you know, receiving tight end, and he's finally proven it this year. So I do agree with that. And frankly, people invested a lot of draft power into a tight end this year, and his name isn't Gronk. You're really hurting. But again, of course, you know, you did invest in the Gronk with the first-round draft pick most likely. And, you know, I mean, Antonio Brown's not doing too shabby either. So, you know, you're going to get what you paid for in the first round. So you paid a lot of money for Gronk. Either way, I did wait on tight ends in most every other league. And the best tight end I got was basically Cameron and Jason Witten, who Jason Witten has been outstanding. I mean, he's been – you know, he had a great first game. You know, he had an okay, solid second game. But he's definitely back in the Dallas, you know, game plan now, especially with the back cornerbacks. God knows how much he'll get to catch there. But if you wait on a tight end, you're probably in a much better position than the guys who didn't wait on tight end.
Yeah, no doubt. Witten was certainly a great value where he was going. And, yeah, you bring up another guy that turned out to be a good value too, Cameron. But, you know, with Cameron, unfortunately, it looks like he's a little bit banged up, and that's pretty much been par for his course, you know, ever since you know, we've been watching him. So hopefully he'll be able to shake that off and be able to play. Hey, one other tight end situation, which, and this is kind of like a deep sleeper kind of guy, but you brought up kind of like the tight end friendly systems and the, you know, the coaches that basically can make tight ends flourish. And of course, one of those situations is in Minnesota, where North Turner is the offensive coordinator. And no, I'm not recommending Kyle Rudolph, even though I think he actually did show a pulse this past week. I would never touch him. I just don't trust him. But the guy behind him, unfortunately, I'm not sure when he's coming back. But he hasn't been active, I don't think, yet. But Michael Pruitt, I think, is going to be a guy that he's really like a hybrid kind of H-back tight end type player. And it really seems to be and it showed actually in one of the preseason games. I think he like scored twice or definitely did very well. But that's a guy to watch. I mean, you know, as we get a little further, you know, watch for him to come back and see how they use him. But that's a guy that could actually be, I think, useful at tight end that no one's really considering at the moment.
Really? Kind of a surprise that one. I said, I didn't see you coming up with a, you know, when you mentioned Minnesota, I was really thinking you were going to stick with Rudolph. But you're going with the guy behind Rudolph?
Well, I didn't let myself get burned by Kyle Rudolph like Golden Tate for the first 3 years he was in the league. But I think last year I would toy around with like starting him. And I was just like, no way. It was kind of like a Colby Fleener kind of moment where I said, you know what? After watching him play, I am never going to have this guy on my team again.
Yeah, no, I mean, Kyle Rudolph he's on a team in Minnesota where it's not one of those consistent teams. Number one, they have you know, obviously Adrian Peterson, so they're going to focus a lot of attention on the running game. Teddy Bridgewater is still developing. And he's developing into a really nice quarterback. But you don't see anybody coming out of these first – like, if you look at these first two games, you know, where they – I believe they beat up on Detroit with the first game. And then their second game – or was it? I'm sorry, the second game with Detroit. I'm trying to remember who they played in the first game. I can't seem to find it. Who they played in game one that they beat?
Who, Minnesota?
Oh, they lost. I'm sorry, they lost in game one. Yeah, they lost to San Francisco. So they got trounced game one by San Francisco 20-3. Their offense wasn't able to do anything in San Francisco. And then they came back and they looked pretty good against Detroit and put up some decent numbers against Detroit. But my problem with this team, and of course in there was a Kyle Rudolph touchdown, and of course in there was also, of course, we had a Calvin Johnson sign in that game as well, which I want to talk about him in a second. But this is a team that's still in flux, I believe, the Minnesota Vikings. And I believe that you don't want to put a lot of, you know, you don't want to go out there and start starting Mike Wallace or Kyle Rudolph. I mean, the only one that's really a viable starter, because you have to start with him as your number one pick, is Adrian Peterson, because you just don't know what's going to happen game to game with this team. They still have a lot of youth on that team, and especially the quarterback, obviously, is the critical one. And they have some maturity issues, obviously, with the Wallace. And then they have the distractions with the Peterson. So it's just a team that I agree that I would just kind of not want to have any players on if I could avoid it for now. I mean, I do have Mike Wallace in a couple leagues, but he is merely like a fifth or sixth wide receiver on my rosters and only a starter in a bad bye week / injury situation. Well, let's talk about
Calvin
Johnson. Oh, go ahead.
But by the way, though, so far from what you've seen of Teddy Bridgewater, and I, you know, I think we both agreed, like, the quarterback class from last year, to me, the best player coming out of that was Derek Carr. I really liked him a lot. And then Blake Bortles was the guy that got all the headlines and, you know, prototypical size and, you know, pretty good arm. But he was very erratic last year, and maybe you can ascribe to that, you know, some of that to his bad team situation. Teddy Bridgewater was also very highly regarded, and I really didn't. The only thing that I like about him is really his ability to get out of trouble. You know, like when he's being chased, you know, by a couple guys, and you know, he definitely has kind of like that unteachable ability to somehow get the ball in a safe place, either let it drop to the ground or get it to a receiver that's kind of like a path. But outside of that, I really didn't see anything special about him. So, I mean, so far, do you think that, you know, he is going to be a star in this league or just kind of like one of those ordinary kind of quarterbacks like Alex Smith or someone like that?
Right now, I mean, if I had to say where he's going to be shooting for, he's shooting for more like a Jason Campbell in his prime type, where, you know, he could put up the numbers, you know, sporadically. But, you know, anytime you have a quarterback whose best part of his game is his ability to scramble, I really think you're going to struggle in the NFL. I really do, because if you look at, you know, any of the scrambling quarterbacks that exist now, like look at Colin Kaepernick. I mean, you know, at first, you know, he had the confidence, you know, he went out there, dominated, took his team to the Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden he took some hits, and teams started saying, hey, we're gonna put your running to an end, and we're going to make you throw the ball. And now that became a big problem for him because he couldn't, you know, run around the field. All of a sudden a receiver breaks open, and, you know, like Michael Crabtree or Vernon Davis, and he chucks it down the field and gets, you know, and gets a touchdown or gets a long pass. That doesn't happen anymore, really, as often for Colin Kaepernick as it did back, you know, 2 years ago when he was just the stud of studs. So my take on these running quarterbacks is you need to learn how to pass. Andrew Luck, can, you know, there's a guy who scrambles. I mean, he's not a scrambler like a Colin Kaepernick or certainly like a Teddy Bridgewater, but he's a scrambler. But he knows how to pass. He stays in the pocket and only runs when necessary. But these other guys, they have planned run plays for them. And frankly, you know, so far you're seeing mediocre work out of them. But, I mean, I'm seeing growth in Teddy Bridgewater. I am. I mean, seeing growth. And, I mean, the first game, I don't even look at the San Francisco game. I don't even care. I mean, you know, it was one of those, you know, it's week one of the NFL on the road against a tough team, you know, whatever. Week two, though, was a better view because not only was he at home, but he actually, you know, had a week under his belt for the season, and he performed better. I mean, he threw only 150 yards and a touchdown, but that was better. And I believe he didn't throw – did he throw any INTs? I think he threw one INT. No, he threw no INTs. And in the game, you know, he had about 21 rushing yards, which means he pretty much stayed in the pocket. He only rushed six times. So I'm liking the development I'm seeing in Bridgewater. And frankly, the whole Minnesota offense is going to be a fun offense to watch throughout the year. But right now, they need to get things figured out. And they need to be able to get the ball to Mike Wallace and Charles Johnson. Those guys need to get, you know, very heavily activated and active in these games before you can throw, you know, any amount of fantasy value onto these teams. And if you really look at it, too, from the receiving standpoint, I mean, between their two outside receivers, they had six receptions in the game for what? How many yards there are? See, maybe about 48 yards. That's horrible. I mean, if you can't get his wideouts involved in the game, I'm talking about those two guys. If you can't get them involved in the game, they're going to have problems, you know, moving the ball outside of Adrian Peterson. But now can we go to Calvin Johnson?
Wait, before we go to Calvin Johnson, I want to ask about one other guy. So Johnny Manziel was obviously his year was a unmitigated disaster, and he really brought that on himself. I mean, he wasn't committed. You know, he basically was flamboyant and had, you know, a poor attitude about the whole thing. But so it looks like he maybe has done like an about face, and certainly came into the season more committed. Now, he still got the physical limitation of being a dwarf by quarterback standards, right? But from what I've seen of him so far, and I was surprised, I heard the news today that they're actually going to put McCown back in the starting role, which I think is really, really stupid, because they should probably just stick with Manziel at this point. But from what I've seen of Manziel this year, that he to me looks like he could be a potential star. I mean, do you get the same impression or?
You know what? Right now, I don't. I mean, I see the potential, but I'm not going to say even potential star yet. I mean, if you look at his stats from this game, first of all, this is one of those games where I wish I could have watched it because I wanted to see how it developed. I mean, he basically had 172 passing yards that game, and he only had eight completions out of 15. So he completed roughly just over 50% of his passes. Now, if you look at those 172 yards, you take away the two bombs that somehow Travis Benjamin broke away from the Tennessee defense, which, by the way, this is why I'm excited for Andrew Luck next week. Because if the Johnny Manziel, Travis Benjamin connection can hook up for 110 yards and two touchdowns and two passes, I can't wait to see what Hilton and Moncrief and Luck and Dorsett can do. But in this one, if you take away those two catches for 110 yards, all of a sudden he's 6-for-13 for about 62 yards. So I'm not going to sit here and claim this defiant excitement yet for Johnny Manziel, but he has definitely stepped up and he has definitely matured to a new level. So, you know, but even the Cleveland Browns are saying, hey, we don't think he's ready. I mean, so are you saying you disagree with Cleveland?
Yeah, absolutely I do. I think McCown is going to lose the job again to Manziel. I just think the talent gap between the two at this point is pretty distinct, and I really can't see how they're putting McCown back in the starting role. We were actually talking during week one, the Jets game, and the Jets defense were harassing him and they were causing a lot of turnovers. But even so, against a very solid defense, yeah, I think he really did an admirable job. And then this past week, for him to follow up with that, what he did, I thought was very impressive. The other thing that to me showed maybe a glimpse of like maturity was when he did take off to run, he didn't try to hurdle over a linebacker or run into a safety full speed. He slid, right? So that to me is a very good sign, you know, of potential maturity for a young quarterback, you know, someone with his talent where they can get carried away with themselves. So I think the future at this point is definitely pointing up for him. Maybe the Browns are right and, you know, it's not going to work out. But from what I've seen, I'm a little bit amazed by this decision to put McCown back in the starting role.
Yeah, I mean, you'd figure they're kind of not in a winning situation, or at least they're in a situation where they're trying to develop Johnny Manziel. But that doesn't seem to be the case. Maybe they want him to still learn a little bit behind it, McCown. I don't know. I understand that there still are issues for him to overcome. And while he had a great game, I mean, you know, no matter how you look at it, yeah, you know, he had a solid game. I mean, you know, even if I want to say, okay, take away two catches for 110 yards, so be it. But what I'm going to tell you this is that there still is a lot of growth for him. And let's see where he sits, you know, week 6 or 7 or 8, because odds are he's going to get more chances to play, and odds are he's going to have another chance to prove that he is that NFL quarterback that a lot of people thought he was, you know, destined to be, and maybe it'll make Jerry Jones look bad for not drafting him. I don't know. But right now, I'm not on that on board with that. We're going to be running out of time here real soon, so I did want to cover the Dallas Cowboys situation, RC. You have a team right now that just lost its quarterback. Tony Romo's out about 8 weeks, maybe more, who knows. Yeah, Dez Bryant is out 8 to 10 weeks himself. So those two guys are hurting pretty bad. Now you're going to have Brandon Whedon, and they acquired Matt Cassel, who seems to really be actually an upgrade from Brandon Whedon, though I highly doubt Matt Cassel will be the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys this coming week. He may, if Brandon Whedon fails, then you may see Matt Cassel week 4. But what do you think about the Dallas Cowboy offense going forward? Do you think this is going to become a run-first team now, and they're going to just roll out those three, maybe even four running backs? You might even see a little Christine Michael come into play here. And, you know, it's because they really don't have the luxury of being a passing team any longer with Whedon and Bryant out. Or do you see, you know, Terrence Williams, Jason Witten, Cole Beasley and company, you know, taking on the role of just keeping the ball chugging? Where do you see the Cowboys at this point?
Yeah, you know what? I'm really impressed with the Cowboys, especially their defense. And, you know, this started kind of like last year where I just think they're, you know, at this point, like a really well-coached team. And I think they're actually going to be fine. And, you know, how awesome is Sean Lee? By the way, if they need help on offense, have him, you know, chip in as a, you know, second tight end, or have him return punts, and he's going to make things happen. He's definitely, to me, you know, and it's really a shame that he's been so brittle the first couple of years, because if this guy actually strung together, you know, like you know, maybe 12 games a year even, he'd be a superstar at his position. And he could very well emerge as that, you know, if he can stay on the field this year, because he's just incredible. And adding him to that defense, I think, really, really helps them out. As far as their offense, I am not that pessimistic about Brandon Whedon. And, I really think that he gives them a better chance than Matt Cassel. Matt Cassel is just plain awful. Matt Cassel, as we know, you know, gained notoriety in the New England system with a couple good games, and then leveraged that into, like, a huge contract. I forget who was stupid enough to sign him. But he basically telegraphs his passes. He floats them up in the air too long. He is really just a disaster. So Whedon, at least, Whedon basically can throw frozen ropes. And, you know, to the extent where he's actually also very mature for a quarterback that doesn't have a lot of NFL experience. I think he got drafted, I believe, in his late 20s or what. So he's definitely over 30 at this point. He's had a lot of time to, you know, kind of like sit and learn. So that actually, to me, could work out well. I think certainly losing Tony Romo is a huge blow to that team. And, of course, losing Dez Bryant is just huge as well. But, you know, it just seems like the way that they're coached and that system, I think it's actually going to work out. And when you look at their division, even with missing two of their superstars, do they have anything to fear in that division? The Giants are just awful. The Eagles, we've discussed, are a disaster. The Redskins, I know they won last week, but I can't figure out how. But so I think the Cowboys are going to be fine, even without those guys.
No, I think the Cowboys are going to be fine going forward. They're going to be all right. Now, in the past, I've said about Matt Cassel that he's a product of a system. I mean, that's why he had so much success in New England, because it was a system. Well, in Dallas has a great system. They have a great offensive line. They have great players in place to produce for him. I do think he can find success there. I know that they're not just going to, you know, replace Brandon Whedon. Whedon is going to get the chance to shine there. But right now, looking at it going forward, this is going to be one of those kind of fun opportunities to see. And if you, and as far as the competition they have in the division, no, I think the Eagles are going to continue to flail. They're going to be 0-3 after this week. I think the Redskins actually play the Giants this week. I believe that's who they play this week. So, you know, there's going to be a winner there. I mean, there's going to be wins in the division because they play each other. But this is an awful division now. And now that the Eagles have to come to the fact that they're garbage, and they really are. I mean, they have such a tough schedule ahead of them. And basically losing two games that you should have won is going and you know, really, let's take a sidestep away from the Eagles really quickly. Well, I'm going to wrap it up on this. The Cowboys play the Falcons this week. They play the Falcons, granted, in Dallas, not in Atlanta, where the Eagles played them. But let's see the two sides of this game, because a lot of people are already chalking this game to the Falcons. They're already saying, yeah, this is one of the games Dallas is going to have to basically give up because, you know, without Romo, they're not going to be able to keep up with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. And that's just hogwash. First of all, Atlanta's barely been able to, you know, they had to do two comeback-from-behind wins against two, you know, piss-poor NFC East teams. And now they have Marinelli and his defense coming into town. And certainly Julio Jones is going to put up points. If you have Julio Jones, odds are you should start him. But the Cowboys are going to, you know, this is a game they can win. They're at home. The defense for Atlanta Falcons is soft, where they can exploit them with the running game and certainly exploit them with the passing game as long as Whedon can throw those frozen ropes, RC. But the real kicker for the Cowboys is the fact that right now they're down two of their, you know, better defensive players. They're going to be getting back Greg Hardy in week five, just in time for the you know, New England Patriots, who will probably cream the Cowboys. That's a game they're not going to win without Romo and Bryant. And then they're going to be getting back, hopefully, Gregory, their second-round draft pick, who really had a great first game up until he got hurt. They're going to be getting him back probably week three or four themselves, probably four or five we're probably looking at, actually. But I know he has a high ankle sprain or something along those lines. And when they get both those guys back, all of a sudden they're going to have a pretty serious pass rush. So there's a lot of good things happening for the Cowboys. And on the offensive side, Terrence Williams is going to be very good. I mean, him and Whedon hooked up last year. They already hooked up this year. That's a great guy. Jason Witten's going to be that outlet. Look for Lance Dunbar to be more actively participating in that offense, more than he was in week two, more like what he was in week one. And, you know, and you're going to see, Cole Beasley as well. I mean, Cole Beasley more has a relationship with Tony Romo. So how extended that's going to be, considering, that Tony Romo's gone, we'll have to see. But I just like everything I see on that offense right now. I like everything that's going to play out. And even though the loss of Romo is tragic for, us Cowboy fans, I just think things are going to be all right. We're going to lose some games regardless. We're going to lose games regardless anyway. But I think things are going to be all right because of some of just the garbage teams we're playing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the Cowboys are going to be fine.
Yeah. All right, well, that's all I got for today. So you got anything else you want to talk about, RC, real quick?
No, I mean, yeah, I think that we could. You did want to mention Calvin Johnson, right? did you forget about that?
Yeah, I kind of forgot. Well, I know we're running real low on time, and I'm just trying to keep track of the room here. That's why I'm getting a little taken off real quickly. But on Calvin Johnson, this is a guy who's kind of, and I know he caught the touchdown pass for Matthew Stafford, but in his first two games, I mean, we talked about him, and I kind of said, he's no longer a number one draft pick. I did say that, in the preseason, and he's kind of proven that so far. But what is really going on there in Detroit is what I want to get to, because he's still an outstanding, wide receiver and one of the most dominating ones in the league when he wants to be. But what is going on that Matthew Stafford isn't throwing the ball as early and often as he possibly can to Calvin Johnson, and instead is targeting, guys like Abdullah and who had an awful game, by the way. I mean, he was awful. So it was a whole running game for the Detroit Lions, but he was awful. But he has Abdullah. He's hitting more often, and Ebron is getting more targets. Why isn't Calvin Johnson getting more targets for the skill that he really is?
Well, I don't know if you have to credit Minnesota's defense this past week or whatever it was, but Matthew Stafford got beaten up pretty good, and it does look like he's going to be probable for this week, but it's becoming apparent that he simply doesn't have the time he needs to throw. So that pocket is just collapsing on him way too quickly, and of course Calvin Johnson does his real damage down the field. He's kind of a waste on shorter routes. He's a big play machine if Stafford has enough time to find him. So I think that's really what's going on there. It's really the deficiency in their offensive line that's not allowing him enough time to throw down the field.
There you go. I mean, we have to see that develop because, I mean, right now, Calvin Johnson, high priority draft pick, obviously. I mean, most guys got in the first or early second round. He's got to start performing. And that Lions team has obviously been a big disappointment, not only to their fans, but from a fantasy perspective, that they haven't been able to do that much damage. And when the lone bright spot is really that's come out of it has been, Eric Ebron, they have problems, especially with all that talent like Golden Tate, Calvin Johnson, Joyce Bell, who still isn't up to game speed. And, of course, Amir Abdullah, who was the talk of the town all preseason in the fantasy football realm, all of a sudden, none of that matters. Even Matthew Stafford has been average. This is a team that really needs to have get a little spark underneath them and put up a 30 to 40-point game next week and just come out and show who they are and win the game and put a W up, not only for the fans, but for the players' confidence. So I'll tell you right now, players play better when they're winning, RC. So from a fantasy standpoint, you want the Lions to win because there's so much fantasy value on that team. That's where I'm going to wrap it up at. I think we're about to get cut off. So great show, RC. I do always appreciate having you around for an hour plus.
All right, man. It was fun as usual. And have a great week.
You too. I'll see you next week.
All right. Take care. Bye.